It's Dr. Peter speaking, and I'd like to welcome Christina Beer to Medical Matters. Now, Christina is a general practitioner at Ashmore, and Christina has a special interest in preventative and lifestyle medicine. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you. Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Now, Christina, getting a good night's sleep seems to be more and more difficult. Can you tell me, do you see many patients who come and say, look, I just can't sleep, doctor?
Oh, Peter, it's a huge problem. In Western societies, the statistics are 1 in 5 of us suffer from insomnia at any one time. So it's a big issue. And, I mean, you're probably aware of, if you haven't had a good night's sleep for a few nights, how terrible you feel. You know, compound that with someone who suffers from long-standing sleep problems, and it can go on for years and years, leading to all sorts of things, unfortunately.
So what are some of the reasons people don't sleep well at night?
Oh, look, it's wide and varied. It can be anything from too much caffeine to alcohol even doesn't allow you to get a good night's sleep. So a lot of people use alcohol to anaesthetise themselves in the evenings, not realising that you'll actually wake up from a very light sleep between 1 and 3am if you've had too much alcohol at night. It can be anything from sleep apnea, which is a condition that's very common where you snore and stop breathing at night. That can cause sleep problems as well. And the other one I find is people overstimulating their brain before sleep. So we need darkness to stimulate the hormone melatonin to allow us to have a good night's sleep. So Peter, I find that looking at TV screens, computer screens, the phones, that causes lots of problems in terms of switching on the brain sleep centre.
So should people, knock off their computer work and TV an hour before? Or what do you recommend?
That's the general recommendation. There are a lot of recommendations for a really good night's sleep, but one of them is stop that stimulation of your brain an hour before bed if you're having trouble sleeping. So turn off the computer screens, you know, turn off the phones if you can, or stop looking at the phones, the emails, even those really bright LED downlights that we now have that are very energy, you know, cost effective, but unfortunately they're not great for our ability to sleep. That's why hospitals are so bright. They're so bright because they're trying to get the staff awake. You know, you don't want the same thing to happen to you.
As I get older, as people get older, you hear them say, look, I seem to need less and less sleep. Is that true?
It isn't, actually. You need the same amount. But what happens, unfortunately, is the quality of sleep is not as good as you get older. So you will wake up more frequently. So you have to be very vigilant in containing a very sound environment for sleep. And some of those things can include keeping the room really dark, really quiet, for instance, and nice and cool, actually, interestingly enough, which is hard in Queensland, isn't it?
It's very hard. I guess the air conditioner might have a place to play, does it?
It does. I mean, it'd, of course, be really expensive to keep it as cool as the current guidelines suggest, which is between 18 and 22 degrees. Now, that for us to keep the room that cold at night time would cost a fortune. So what I generally say is turn the aircon on, cool the room down before you go to bed, and then switch it off. Turn on the fan and hop into bed and try and keep yourself cool that way.
That's very good advice, I think, because 18, geez, I would find 18 pretty cold, far less my wife, who doesn't like the cold. But anyway, are there any other lifestyle hints you would like to give us about getting a good night's sleep? You've said we should reduce our caffeine.
Yes.
Reduce our stimulation from TV and computers.
Yes. Not to harp on caffeine. Caffeine's not evil, obviously. It's not bad for us. But if you're having trouble sleeping, realise caffeine lasts in your system up to 6 hours. Some people take 12 hours to clear a cup of coffee. Interesting, Peter, you can have a genetic test to see how long it takes you to clear a cup of coffee. It takes me 12 hours to clear a cup of coffee. So I know I can't have more than one in the morning at 9 a.m. If I'm having trouble sleeping. Now, there was a time a couple of weeks back I was having 2 cups, one in the morning and one at 2 o'clock. And I was finding I was waking up once again at that very normal time to wake up, 1 and 3 a.m., which is a typical time if you're having too much caffeine. The other thing that will wake you up between 1 and 3 a.m., which I commonly hear in the practice setting, is stress. So that's going to be my other lifestyle tip. Consider the stress in your life, whether it's relational stress, financial pressure, whether it's health stress, you're worried about your health. Try and see if there's any way to try and minimise that. That's the other big tip. Stress and anxiety keep us awake.
Just coming back to that genetic test, can you tell me a little bit about that and what it costs and who does it?
It's interesting, isn't it? You can see your GP about that. There is one company in Australia. It's not super cheap. It is called Smart DNA, and the other one's in the States called 23andMe. And they do, but they do your whole genome. So you've got to be prepared. Do I want to know all of my genes? See, that's the thing. Sometimes it's a bit of a catch-22, isn't it? It's good to know, but sometimes it's good not to know too. So that's just one of the genetic markers that was interesting when it came up when I decided to get my genetic profile done, and that was one of them that came up. Yeah, I've got the slow metabolism for caffeine gene.
I'll come back to that another time, because knowing your genome may not be a good thing to have if you're going to get insurance or medical insurance or life or, you know.
It's a big debate.
It's a big debate. Yes. Because if you're going to insure yourself from a life, you know, in terms of disability cover or life cover, you've got a duty of disclosure to tell them your genome. But if you've got inherited disease, they're obviously going to load you significantly. So
sometimes it's good not to know. But I guess that's another topic in itself, isn't it?
It is the whole topic. Genes. We'll come back to that. So what about sleeping pills? Why can't you just give me a script, doctor?
I mean, sleeping pills are a big thing. They're obviously widely distributed worldwide. The issue with sleeping pills is a couple. The main issue that I see is that individuals do not get a very restful night's sleep on them. They keep you superficially awake, and they'll only keep you asleep for a few hours. So if you don't want to be popping pills all the time, I recommend a different strategy. The other thing with sleeping pills, unfortunately, is to develop tolerance and dependence, which means you need more and more and more and more of them to get the same effect. And you also develop a dependence on them. If you don't take them, you can't sleep. So you know that, unfortunately, your body's become dependent upon them, and that nobody wants to be dependent on having to take something like a sleeping tablet. So that's the issue. I often recommend them short term if someone's going through a crisis. They've had a loved one pass away and they're finding it very difficult to get a good night's sleep, which is making their whole mood and their grief worse. I'll recommend them for a short time, but I'll very quickly wean someone off and try a different strategy.
Are there any natural supplements we can take that'll help us sleep?
There are a few on the market. The one that's widely researched is called Circadin, which a GP can prescribe. That's the natural sleep hormone melatonin. Melatonin is produced by the brain, and that's what signals sleepiness. And what you do is you reset your body clock by taking Circadin, which is the drug name for the product melatonin, for 3 weeks straight. Every night for 3 weeks, at the same time each night, 2 hours before bed, and you set the same bedtime, and it resets your body clock to try and encourage your brain to get the idea this is now time to sleep.
And that's available now in Australia.
It is widely available now. It has to be prescription only, so ask your GP about that one. There are a few others on the market, like valerian and kava. There isn't a lot of research for those. Valerian in particular, they do have more research for. Kava unfortunately has some side effects to do with liver damage, so I'd probably stay away from kava products.
So if we've got a patient listening to us and they're having sleep problems,
yes,
where should they start?
I do recommend a checkup, a full health checkup by a GP, a health professional that you trust, and someone that can do a head to toe. You know, is it your blood pressure? Is that the reason why you can't sleep? Is it because you're carrying a little too much weight and that's led to sleep apnea? Is it other problems? Are you suffering from depression or anxiety? Has that gone undiagnosed, and does that need to be dealt with? So there are quite a few things that a GP will be able to, you know, very quickly, within a matter of 15-20 minutes, be able to just diagnose and set you in the right direction.
Now, this sleep apnea, there are a lot of people, I've come across that a lot, even in ophthalmology.
Yes.
Tell me about sleep apnea.
Sleep apnea is a condition where unfortunately you can stop breathing and in the middle of the night, and you can also wake up several times, up to 60-70 times a night, and not realise it. So people snore. Often one of the indications is you're very sleepy during the day. The other indication is your partner mentions that you snore at night, or they might mention that they witness you stop breathing for a period of, you know, 30, 60 seconds even, and then you gasp for air. You don't seem to be aware of this when you wake up in the morning. You don't even know what's going on. All you know is that you could fall asleep at the drop of a hat during the day. Be mindful that condition can lead to heart attacks and increased blood pressure. So you need to, if that's happening, please don't ignore it. Please don't think your wife's just complaining for no reason, or conversely, your husband's complaining for no reason. You know, please go and investigate that, because if it is sleep apnea, you don't want the ramifications of that later on.
Yeah, so look, I was surprised to find that some people with glaucoma, their glaucoma is getting worse, in fact, because they have sleep apnea. Mm. And in fact, they're losing a lot of those very important nerve fiber cells, those optic nerve fiber cells at night when they're not getting the correct oxygen amount. So,
wow, that's interesting.
So, that, you know, it can have a place, particularly in glaucoma, it can have a place in hypertension, it can have a place in heart attacks. So you're right, sleep is obviously very important. Christina, thank you for your time, and I hope you're going to come back to another Medical Matters show. And you were saying that you'd like to mention, a lot of people take multivitamins these days.
Yes.
So I'd like you to come back another day, please, and tell me about multivitamins. Thank you.
Thank you.